Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Austin, Texas.
Austin man walks up to a stranger using a computer on the fourth floor of the Central Library, punches him in the head so hard he's knocked out of the chair, stomps on his head multiple times while he lies unconscious on the floor, then calmly walks back to his own computer, sits down. 10 cases of this, 3 felonies, all dismissed, 4 assaults, all dismissed, 0 jury trials, because he's got the last name Vasquez. And of course, the guy needs to be in a lunatic asylum, but they don't have those anymore.
APD Chief Lisa Davis happened to be at the library for a meeting about library security, so she helped detain Vasquez. He's now charged with felony aggravated assault. The victim has critical injuries.
Austin, Texas, like many ACT Blue Soros strongholds, has a district attorney problem. Austin DA Jose Garza is releasing most first-time offenders back into a city where crime has skyrocketed.
I know we have a lot of DSA comrades, and I'm going to pass it off to our own elected official, Jose Garza.
Instituted a new radical policy, and that policy was to say that no one who does not pose a threat to our community should be sitting in jail simply because they can't afford to get out.
Hey, Jose Garza, why do you let all the criminals out? Every day people harass me on the bus. What's the deal, Jose Garza?
We have Jose Garza here in Austin, Texas, who is hands down the worst Soros DA, which says a lot. And he releases people after they shoot random crowds the next day. No bond. Only way you get in trouble is if the cops kill you. You make it to him, you're walking.
An attack on a Cap Metro bus in South Austin sent 2 people to the hospital this afternoon. This comes at a time when Cap Metro is expecting big crowds for South by Southwest.
Now, Cap Metro reports that its police responded to nearly 200 criminal offenses since June of 2025, which is also the same time that they launched their transit police. And for some context, Cap Metro says that they average nearly 2 million riders a month.
This is just the latest in a string of violent events on Cap Metro buses or bus stops. In 2022, a teenager was accused of stabbing a man to death at a Cap Metro bus stop in North Austin. In February of 2025, a teen was stabbed at a bus stop near LBJ High School in East Austin. Then in May of that year, one man fatally stabbed another man as they were riding a Cap Metro bus. That same month, Cap Metro created its transit police department. In January of this year, Austin police say a woman stabbed a man on a Cap Metro bus at 5th and Lavaca downtown. Later that month, police arrested a man for stabbing a victim 3 times on a Cap Metro bus. And in February, APD responded to a shoot-stab call at a downtown bus stop that sent one person to the hospital.
APD says Kandel admitted to stabbing Mr. Gupta because he resembled his uncle. He's now in the Travis County Jail facing a first-degree murder charge. Today, Cap Metro leadership acknowledged those witnesses who were on the bus.
Last night was an isolated incident, but it was horrific.
An isolated incident.
Bus operators are being assaulted. They're being spit on. We have a high uptick. And I'm calling upon all the leadership here for your help. I shouldn't have to file a grievance.
You know, a lot of these are broader social issues, healthcare issues, and lots of economic issues that fall on our doorstep. But we may not be able to solve those problems, but we do have to grapple with the impacts of those broader social problems.
According to court documents, police believe 55-year-old Harold Newton Keene shot someone in the library's 6th floor bathroom and then escaped on a Cap Metro bus. Police think Keene shot someone else about 10 hours earlier.
Quita, that's right. And police say that earlier shooting happened on board another bus. This one was near the UT campus around 1:30 in the morning.
This guy runs up while somebody is sitting there reading a book, according to witnesses, beats him from behind, stomps his head in so bad the person's in a coma, fighting for their life. And the female police chief goes and basically tackles this guy. That's how bad crime is in Austin.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
The American Journal. Happy Monday, everyone. It's a lot to unpack. Another crazy weekend. We're glad you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot to get you read in on, and we got our eyes everywhere, all over D.C. right now, because we're awaiting the confirmation hearing to begin for Senator Mark Wayne Mullins. Now, as many of you guys know, he has been nominated, I guess you could say, by President Trump to run DHS. That's after the DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, the current one, is expected to take on a new role. Obviously, it's been very controversial what's been going on internally over at DHS. So once that hearing begins, we'll bring you straight there. There's also a discussion going on right now regarding freedom, religious freedom, though, and the healthcare system. So we're also keeping our eye on that as well. We'll bring it to you if that does get interesting, of course. So our team is watching and we'll be ready to go if anything does happen. But we got a great lineup for you of guests. Seth Kessel will be joining the program. He's got his 2026 midterm predictions in, and there's a lot of key races he wants to make sure your eyes are glued to. So we look forward to having Seth on in about 20 minutes. He'll be joining us, so we look forward to that. We'll also be bringing in Mehek Cook as well. As many of you guys know, she is an incredible attorney. She's a former prosecutor, and she's done a great job at going after those who are trying to terrorize this country. Well, there's a lot that's been going on, obviously. As you guys saw, there were four terror attacks that took place in a matter of just days. Mehek Cook will be joining me to weigh in on the very latest on that front as well. Plus, the Trump administration is actually going to start charging Americans less if you decide that you don't want to be an American citizen anymore. It's a massive discount, and Mehek's got the latest on that as well. So we look forward to discussing that with her. But, you know, I feel like every day we got to kick it off with a little bit of overview regarding what's the latest in Iran. Now, as many of you guys know, there's been several attacks taking place around Iran's neighbors, specifically Dubai, which I don't think I was expecting to see the attacks on Dubai. I know many, especially those in the area, weren't expecting those attacks. But yesterday, something big actually happened. It looks like there was a drone attack that happened at their airport. Take a look at the footage. Apparently, they're claiming this was an Iranian drone that somehow was able to strike and hit a nearby fuel tank, and it caused a fire, which resulted in several flights being suspended. Now, currently, some of those flights have been resumed. But again, this is the ongoing issue that's happening right now. Iran is just frantically hitting anything that they can hit at this point, hoping that they, I guess, get a win somewhere. The move is obviously desperate, and the Emirates airline is saying now to customers that, number one, your safety is our top priority, but number two, we will begin slowly resuming, obviously, the flights when we can promise our customer base that everything is safe. But, you know, there's a lot else happening right now, and I don't think a lot of people even know what's going on right now, because the White House has been sending out mixed messages, and when I'm going through everything and I'm trying to dig for the latest, I feel like we're going back and forth on the word war. There's different words being used when discussing what's happening in Iran. At first, we were told by many officials that we were at war, but they didn't want to use the term war, but it was very clear what they were saying, war. Then you hear, we're not exactly at war. It's all just very, very confusing. And obviously, that's intentional because our administration right now, I don't think, is being very transparent on any of these issues. But the Trump administration, through the State Department Rewards Justice Program, is now offering up to $10 million for information that leads to the key members of the, as many of you guys know, the IRGC. Now, that $10 million has officially been put up And they're asking for folks to give them any key information that leads to their arrests or deaths. Now, as we continue to kind of scope through the very latest that's going on right now, President Trump spoke yesterday to the media while heading back to D.C. on his flight. And here's the latest in clip one. Take a listen. Now, there's many questions about Iran, and the president didn't answer a bunch, especially when it comes to claiming victory. And the president has said, and he's been bragging about it, that they've completely decimated their both military, but specifically the Navy. Now, we'll talk about why that's so important in just a little bit. But President Trump detailing when he could actually declare his victory in clip two. Take a listen.
Has been decimated economically in other ways. Are you ready to officially declare victory against Iran?
There's no reason to. I think I just say they're decimated, but I would do that. I think that we've done damage to them right now. If we left right now, it would take them 10 years and more to rebuild. But I'm still not declaring it over. Our military is incredible. The job they've done is just incredible. And the problem is that when you look at fake stories written by you people, written by and generated by AI, it's incredible. And I just wonder, like, Jeff, do you know that these are fake stories? Did you know that the rally of 250,000 people, the supposed rally, was fake? Did you know that?
Because I saw the reporting on it.
But you wrote about it. You talked about it. And you knew it was fake. It was AI generated.
No, I didn't know it was fake.
You know it. anybody that knew the country knew there's not 250,000 people.
Okay, we're going to get into that a little bit because there's specific threats that are being made right now by the FCC and President Trump in regards to those journalists who are posting fake news. You know how awkward it has to be for the reporter there who's getting grilled by the President of the United States about publishing something that was completely false? Obviously, very, very awkward, very, very uncomfortable. But, I mean, you got to call it out, especially when they're right in front of your face and they've got nowhere to go because you're on a flight. Takes guts to do that, though. President Trump also being gutsy and telling those other countries that they better get involved in helping secure the Strait of Hormuz. As many of you guys know, President Trump pushing for other countries to get involved, but specifically, he's now calling on China, the CCP, to step up and get involved to make sure that there's a safe way for oil tankers and others to be able to make their way through the region. Take a listen to clip three. Now, obviously, other countries are going to have to step in and start helping out. And I'm pretty sure the president's going to be applying some pressure to make sure they do just that. But 60 Minutes actually did a really interesting piece where they detailed specifically what it's like right now for the local transporters in the region. And I think it was worth a listen. So now I'm going to make you take a listen to this one as well. Clip four.
Matt Smith monitors ship activity in the Strait as an oil market analyst for Kepler, which tracks global trade and shipping. He made this time lapse showing how quickly ship traffic moved around the bend of the strait in the days before the war.
So on a normal day, you see about 100 or so ships that pass through there. When the bombing started with Iran, we saw it drop to about 70. On the Sunday, we saw it drop into the teens. And then since then, it's just one or two tankers that are passing through there every day.
All those red and green arrows represent oil tankers that haven't moved for the past 2 weeks.
Fair to say this is a very expensive parking lot?
It is a very, very expensive parking lot, that's right.
The few ships that have moved are mostly from one country, Iran.
And you can see that Hilda is loaded with Iranian crude.
Hilda is an Iranian vessel.
Yes, an Iranian
loaded
tanker.
Loaded with Iranian crude.
2 million barrels, and with all of that Iranian stuff, it is typically heading to China.
That oil is going to China.
Yeah.
And this past week, Smith and his team made a surprising discovery that Iran has exported daily 100,000 more barrels of oil than it did before the war, most of it going to China. Smith says 9 Iranian oil tankers have traveled through the Strait of Hormuz by turning off transponders that reveal locations. Thursday, on Iran State TV, the first public statement from the country's new supreme leader was read, saying, quote, "The leverage of blocking the Strait of Hormuz must continue."
Now, obviously, folks, that is going to be something that's going to be an ongoing issue, but the president really making this a top priority to step it up a bit and apply that pressure. Now, let's shift gears a little bit, because as I mentioned earlier in the open, the president is making it very clear that he wants to capture all of these Iranian regime terrorists, those who have been torturing Iranians for quite some time. But through the State Department, has offered a $10 million reward for anyone who could provide them with tips that lead to the top officials being arrested. Their new supreme leader, that's the one who you heard previously, Pete Hegseth, saying that he's disfigured after a local attack. Well, the new supreme leader, according to a new New York Post article that was just released today, may be gay. And I know that sounds funny to hear out loud, but the reality of it is no one thought it was funnier than President Trump himself. According to the report, President Trump, as others did, when they heard from the intel community about the possibility of him being gay, everyone laughed. They laughed. Now, if I were to say the name of this individual, I'm going to butcher it. So we'll just go with Mohammed, as I usually do. But when it comes to all of this, folks, this is what they do. Isn't it quite the interesting set of events that go on, right? These men pretend like they're against gays, and then secretly they're out there banging other men. When you look at the details of this report, it appears, according to New York Post, that he has a former tutor who he was having a sexual affair with. And they also say that he's made sexual advances to other men. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? The people who continue to go out there and torture women and also say that they don't support gays and throw them off the roofs, well, apparently they're into gay sex themselves. Surprise, surprise. No surprise, actually. No surprise at all. I also wanted to shift gears over to this topic as well, because you probably heard President Trump ripping the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer about his failure to join the US in their goal of going out there and launching the attacks in Iran. And, you know, Keir Starmer, I don't even side against him on this one. Although I get it that we've had an alliance for many, many years now, I understand that he probably wouldn't want his country involved in Iran. Well, why? Because they've imported millions and millions of Muslims who are literally just sitting around waiting to attack. And they are almost in the majority of that country. And what's going to happen? Well, of course, you know, as you've seen in other countries as well, once they become the majority, they completely take over and slaughter innocent people, Christians specifically. And so right now you hear Keir Starmer. He's a little afraid. He's a little afraid. But President Trump yesterday decided to call out again Keir Starmer for failing to help the United States out when all of these attacks first launch in clip 5. Take a listen.
I don't want them after we win the war. I want them before we start. So whether we get support or not, say this when I said it to them. We will remember.
He will never forget. He will never forget. And he was talking about Truth Social. He's posted about this several times already. And rightfully so. Obviously, the UK is supposed to be one of our greatest allies. And if he truly believed and had the intel to back it up, well, that's probably why. Also, keep in mind, too, we never shared one of the most recent instances that took place. We actually never shared our intel briefing with the UK. So obviously, there is some let's just say, some beef between the president and UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Now, Keir Starmer addressing all of this, because obviously it's too hot to ignore right now, because the president is applying a lot of pressure, telling Starmer, listen, we're not going to sit here and allow you to jump in on this now and help us out now. You wouldn't let us use your air bases when we needed them. But now that, as President Trump has once said, now that we've won this, you guys want to jump in and join us. But the reality of it is Keir Starmer's got a little bit of a rebuttal himself, and he just gave this earlier this morning. Take a listen to clip six.
Because moments like this also tell you about leadership. Whether to commit British troops to military action is the most serious responsibility for any Prime Minister. I have been attacked by some for my decision not to join the offensive against Iran. But at every stage, I've stood by my principles. Principles which I held just as strongly when it came to debate about the Iraq War in 2003. Principles which I believe are shared by the British people, that our decision should be based on a calm, level-headed assessment of the British national interest, and that if we are to send our servicemen and women into harm's way, the very least they deserve is to know that they do so on a legal basis and with a proper thought-through plan. Now, there are others who would have made a different decision 2 weeks ago. They would have rushed the UK headlong into this war without the full picture of what they're sending our forces into and without a plan to get us out. That is not leading. It's following. My leadership is about standing firm for the British interest, no matter the pressure. And I believe time will show that we have the right approach.
That's Keir Starmer for you. He's not going to fall to pressure, although he's imported the third world and no problem trading in his people for just that. Now, all of a sudden, he's a tough leader and he's not going to fall for any pressure. Yeah, I'm not believing. I know you're not either. The guy's an absolute scumbag, and he's traded his country in for third war garbage that's going around and raping children and women. So piss off, Keir Starmer. Let's pivot. It's probably a little aggressive for an early morning show, but let's pivot a little bit. The United Arab Emirates has just announced they've actually arrested several individuals. Over two dozen individuals have been arrested from various countries. Now, they were arrested for sharing war footage related to the escalating Middle East conflict. Particularly, as many of you guys know, we're talking about the missiles that came from Iran. Now, specifically what they're going after these suspects with, and by the way, there's 25 of them so far that have been apprehended, they're facing charges regarding cybercrime laws for publishing misleading content, inciting panic, or exposing, the capabilities of the defense system, obviously, which they're doing when they're posting those videos. And this is how scary it is. Even in one incident, they're calling about an AI-generated or unrelated footage being released onto the internet. And so they have since been apprehended. Now, it's obviously deeply concerning, given the fact that this is a very well-known area for being very, very tough on people. A separate case involves a 60-year-old British woman who apparently was a tourist from London in the area. She was arrested in Dubai while on vacation for allegedly filming the Iranian missile. She's been charged with broadcasting rumors. Yeah, rumors. I'm sure this is probably a way for them to defend themselves and keep tourism coming in. I mean, if Dubai loses tourism, that's going to be a big, big financial burden for them, obviously. But she's potentially facing 2 years in prison right now. So keep that in mind. This is why I don't go to Dubai. This is why I don't go out to other countries. I just stay at home. It's safer. But listen, we're talking about the topic of fake news. As many of you guys heard, President Trump go after that reporter who obviously was publishing it himself. President Trump has had enough. And in fact, took to Truth Social to say just that. President Trump threatening to charge journalists and media outlets with treason for pushing out false information about the ongoing war between the United States and Iran, claiming that the spread of Iranian-fed misinformation, including AI-generated videos, is depicting events like the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft, which they say caught fire. But apparently President Trump's saying that actually never happened. And a lot of those images that were being pushed out there, he's claiming were AI-generated and false information. Again, that is a big issue.
That is a big issue. And it's not just President Trump ripping them for just that. The FCC chairman, Brendan Carr, is also jumping on board. And he's reminding these big networks that broadcasting licenses could, well, they should be up for renewal very, very soon. And if they're a news organization pushing out fake information, well, guess what? They might not get their licensing back. Saying that operation in public interest, well, operating in public interest, they will decide on whether or not when you're publishing fake news, whether you should have those licenses renewed. So again, that's the White House coming out and saying just that. Obviously, the FCC chairman as well, who's been taking a very aggressive approach over these last few years, and or say last year since President Trump made his way back into the White House. And obviously, it's much appreciated. So we'll keep our eye on just that. Now, in a little bit, we're going to go over Tucker Carlson and the very latest there, because I wanted to play his full accusations for you all at home. Plus, Miranda Devine is actually responding to Tucker's claims herself. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But also, by the way, I did reach out to the CIA for comments on all of that. We're still waiting to hear back from the CIA because I want to hear whether or not, you know, they have any actual statements to put out there regarding what Tucker is saying. Tucker's claiming that there's a criminal referral that was handed down from the CIA that's supposed to be sent over to the DOJ in regards to his dealings with Iran. Now, again, he's denying all claims as that he's loyal to the United States, but we'll dive into that in just a little bit. Interesting story that recently just came out. There was a story regarding a lobbyist, John Nass, a 34-year-old conservative attorney and lobbyist. Well, he was arrested by the FBI in Midtown Manhattan over, I believe it was Friday he was arrested, and he's been charged with attempted extortion. Now, here's the interesting part in all of this. He appeared in a Brooklyn federal court the next day and was released on a $5 million bond, which is insane when you think about it, but I guess it depends on what kind of threats he was trying to hover over his alleged victims. He's accused of trying to extort about $500,000 in unpaid fees from a former client, Joseph Schwartz, a former nursing home executive convicted of tax crimes. Now, Nass was successfully able to help him to secure a pardon from President Trump in late 2025 after receiving about $100,000 from the lobbying work that he was doing for that. Now, apparently, he wanted an extra $500,000, and so he was like allegedly, we should say, trying to shake him down. Court filings indicate that Nass hired an associate to use forceful means to collect the debts from Schwartz and his son. Ain't that something? The U.S. attorney emphasized that the irony of all of this is given the fact that the presidential pardon was for Schwartz. And yeah, you know, this is the thing. And I think this is the reason why I'm going to highlight the story is I think this is going to be a very, very important story over these next few days. I believe that those within all administrations are the ones who have been doing this for a while. Like, how does he somehow, some way, able to charge someone $100,000 plus another $500,000 is what he's looking to bail for to get a pardon? How is he able to secure that? I mean, this is a much bigger issue, right? How can someone make that type of a commitment to a client and tell him, I will make sure that you get whatever you need, the pardon, all done. All done. Just pay me this chunk of change and we'll make it happen. This is the reason why I think, in my opinion, that you're actually not going to see charges filed in the AutoPen scandal. Why? Well, because I believe that there are people on both sides of all of this, both administrations, who have participated in behavior just like this. And it's very obviously unfortunate, but most importantly, it's what's going on right now throughout our federal government. And so when you're sitting here scratching your head wondering why there's no charges being filed in the AutoPen scandal, well, take a look at stories like that and you'll figure it out yourself. All right, folks, more to discuss in just a little bit. The AlexJonesStore.com right now has its March mega sale going on. So head on over to the shop. And it looks like, I don't even know how it's still up on the website, but it's there. That shirt that was supposed to be, well, it was only on sale for a limited time. It's still up on sale right now, $14.99 up on the AlexJonesStore.com. Get it before that sale ends, because it's supposed to end any hour now. So head on over right now, the AlexJonesStore.com. Grab that exclusive shirt today, and we'll be right back.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down to make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell. And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on it since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvisshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvisshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvisshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If it matters to America, it matters here. This is The American Journal with Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to The American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. With a lot to dive into, but I want to focus on the midterm elections because obviously we've been talking about those. And it's very controversial given the fact that, you know, the president has just launched a war in Iran, which I know many of his supporters did not want in the first place. And, a lot of the campaign promises really haven't been carried out on right now. And so a lot of people are a little skeptical as to what it's going to look like for us in November. But before I get into the specifics of all of that, Senator Chuck Schumer spoke on the Senate floor, in regards to the Save America Act. Now, as many of you guys know, Democrats are the ones that are holding it up, and also some rhinos included, obviously, people like Mitch McConnell, who are not running for re-election, obviously, but most importantly, hate President Trump with a burning passion and will never make any of that stuff pass through the Senate.
Because the goal with all of this is to sit back and to try to crush any of the president's agenda. I mean, that's something that Mitch McConnell has been hyper-focused on. So it's no surprise there. But Chuck Schumer, in clip 16, spoke about the Save America Act and what this means for the midterm elections. Take a listen.
On the Save Act, Donald Trump has given Republicans in Congress a ridiculous ultimatum. Help him thoroughly undermine our democracy, or he will bring all legislation to a screeching halt. What kind of president is this? Sounds like a pouting second grader. Even though it's clear that the SAVE Act has little chance of becoming law, Donald Trump is still hell-bent on getting Republicans to ram this bill through the chamber because he thinks undermining the vote is the only prayer Republicans have in the midterms. Isn't that pathetic? Republicans think they're doing so bad that they must undermine democracy and prevent tens of millions of Americans from voting? Donald Trump has said it himself. He said if Republicans can pass the SAVE Act, it'll guarantee the midterms. Let me read that again. Donald Trump says if Republicans pass the SAVE Act, it'll guarantee the midterms. This is outrageous. Undermine democracy? Prevent people from voting in a democracy, and that's the only way you can win. That's not democracy, Donald Trump.
Chuck Schumer's living at the key point in all that. He keeps saying people, but what he really means is illegal aliens. The president is looking to make sure illegal aliens do not weigh in on our federal elections, and that's something he, as president of the United States, has authority to do. Joining me to discuss is Seth Kestrel. He is the former Army captain. He's also a best-selling author, and he's got a brand new book out right now that's available on Amazon that we'll talk about in just a little bit, The American War on Election Corruption. And it's been an ongoing battle for Seth, because Seth has been fighting this for quite some time now. So it's an honor to have you on the show today, Seth. Thank you for being here. The book is very exciting to read. I started reading this earlier this morning, and I look forward to diving into it with you in detail in just a few moments. But, you know, you've obviously came to fame when you decided to weigh in on the 2026 election. Your accuracy has so many people now looking through your numbers because you were spot on for all of this. So obviously now we're waiting for the midterm elections to take place, and a lot of people are bouncing back and forth. Will it be a complete loss for, you know, Republicans? Will it be a win for Republicans? Will they gain some seats? Will they keep the majority? There's a lot of people out there running all of these thoughts back and forth, but you've put together a really detailed, I'd say a detailed report that I had the pleasure of sitting back and listening just a few weeks ago to you kind of walk us all through. So I want to kick it off and kind of focus on the key areas and in a lot of these key races. I want to give you the ground and let you go running with this one. Let's talk about the Senate right now, because obviously, you know, Mitch McConnell, Tom Tillis, others are not running for re-election right now. And so those seats are going to be up on the table. So what do you see happening in our Senate?
I mean, the first thing people need to understand about the midterm environment, it differs substantially from a presidential election cycle. So in the Senate, historically speaking, since 1934, the president's party loses seats in the Senate 16 out of 23 times. So in 2018, President Trump's Republicans gained a net of 2 Senate seats. That is highly dependent on what kind of a map you have coming out. So this time around, the Democrats have a really bad map, and they don't have a lot of opportunities to pick up seats. So if you're into these betting markets, I think keeping the Republicans with the Senate is a really good bet. The most likely seat for Democrats to pick off is North Carolina. That's going to be Roy Cooper against Michael Whatley. I think that's probably a coin toss, to be honest. And in Maine, they're always going after Susan Collins. Susan Collins seems to be able to elude them every time she runs. So even if they got those two, the Republicans still have 51 seats. These seats right here are called the Senate Core Four. These are the ones everybody agrees on as being the ones that are most in play. Georgia for John Ossoff is going to be tough to pick off in this kind of environment. And then Michigan's got an open seat, but there is a candidate named Abdul Al-Sayed running for the Dems. If he's the nominee, then Mike Rogers has a pretty good shot at winning the seat. Since we had that presentation, New Hampshire is potentially on the map with John Sununu in the race, but in a 2026 cycle, I would probably slightly favor Democrats. I have the Republicans definitely holding on to the Senate.
Well, let's go into the Michael Whatley race a little bit in North Carolina, because actually, and it works out perfectly, because President Trump, just a few moments before you came on, backed Whatley again, and he was pushing for him. Now, Roy Cooper is someone who I extensively reported on back when the floods were taking place, and you know, there were federal resources in the area, and he actually didn't give them permission until days later to allow those federal resources to go out there and to save the Americans who were either stuck in their homes, they were flooded in. There were so many issues there, but he didn't allow them in at all. And so For me, I would say that it's probably if the media in North Carolina is being honest and fair, they'll highlight the fact, like President Trump is, that Roy Cooper was a horrible governor and that it's really just a no-brainer. But what do you see taking place specifically in North Carolina that has you maybe a little bit on alert?
It's a really competitive state. It has the Florida effect to a smaller degree, where you have a lot of people moving in from northeastern states and they're registering Republican, which I can spot in the voter registration data. It is predictive in North Carolina, but you have two big counties there, Wake and Mecklenburg counties. We're talking about Metro Raleigh and Metro Charlotte, where if President Trump didn't make the other 98 counties as red as they were, he would have lost North Carolina in 2024 with Romney's margins in those counties. So those are getting to be troublesome counties. The Republicans really need to go engage the voter bases in those places. North Carolina prefers federal Republicans. Three of the last four Senate races in North Carolina have gone to Republicans. But of course, this is a Democrat favoring midterm year. Cooper's former governor with 100% name recognition. And Whatley, he's not too far off in polling. I'm not a big polling guy, but this is going to be a tough race. Dems are going to put a lot of money in this, knowing that this is the most likely seat for them to grab.
Yeah, and let's go over some of the core four that you've selected, too, because you've also selected Georgia, and that's a big one, too. What do you see happening in Georgia? Because you and I have talked about it for years now. I've actually had you on so many shows that I was producing to talk about all the issues internally in Georgia's elections. But what do you see playing out in the Senate race?
Well, Georgia is fundamentally, and I've already seen our slide deck we're going to get into, Georgia is one of the epicenters of electoral dysfunction. So now we're looking here at the gubernatorial races. These are the top four races in my mind, and there are 36 governor's races on the map this year. So right here in Arizona where I live, Katie Hobbs is up for re-election, and on paper, her chances look really bad. The Republicans have expanded the voter registration edge from 166,000 in 2022 when Carrie Lake supposedly lost by 17,000 ballots, and now it's almost 330,000. So Andy Biggs is almost certain to be the Republican Party nominee. I think he's a really good nominee for the state. He's very Trumpy in policy. He's going to do okay in the urban areas as well. He's from Tucson originally, but he's run out of Phoenix for years. So I like his chances at the top of the ticket. The legislature here is very tough. But you look at the rest of the states out there. We've got Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia as the key governor's races this year. And in Georgia particularly, that's the only state Trump won in 2024 that I have legitimate concerns about for the next 10 or 12 years. Of course, those concerns would abate if we would have some legitimate election reform passed in our country.
Yeah, let's go over what your concerns are specifically in Georgia, because I believe we have that graphic as well. The Gang of Eight is what you refer to it as in the slides that you've come up with. Walk us through what has you so concerned about Georgia.
All right, so in my book, you'll find that I consider voter registration, the corruption of voter registration, to be the catalyst for fraudulent elections. A lot of people focus on machines, others focus on mail. But without a corrupted voter registration database, which is, of course, why these states won't comply with the DOJ's demands to hand over voter rolls, you can't run fair elections. So on the voter registration slide in Georgia, you have eight counties that make up what I call the Atlantic Gang of Eight. You have the core Atlanta counties of Fulton and DeKalb. Then you have the two oldest suburbs, Cobb and Gwinnett counties. And then you have two Republican suburbs up north, Cherokee and Forsyth counties. And then down south of core Atlanta, you have Clayton and Henry. These are Democrat strongholds. So on the screen, the numbers in yellow, that is the average growth of the voter roll for three presidential cycles, 2004 to 08, 08 to 12. That's Romney, Obama, and then 12 to 16, Trump, Clinton. So you could expect in those three cycles for Fulton County to grow by 47,000 plus registrations and so on throughout the slide. Now, the number in red, that is the growth in voter registration between 2016 and 2020. And in between Trump's first election and his reelection bid, Georgia moved to automatic voter registration. Well, automatic voter registration is the number one tell that a state is going to vote Democrat, especially when it's combined with excessive mail-in voting. So in the case of Georgia, Georgia increased its mail ballot count 634% between 2016 and 2020. So when you blow up the voter rolls and then you expand mail-in balloting on the way to the dream of universal mail-in voting, then you have overwhelming odds of creating a Democrat state, which is why the man who wrote the foreword to my book, Newt Gingrich, often says the elections aren't stolen, they're rigged. And I'd say I agree with the way the language comes off in that.
Well, Seth, let's dive into that a little bit because it's Georgia. So from what I understand, and folks, you know, the book is available right now, Election Corruption. It's available right now on Amazon. And let me remind you, Seth is a great author and he does great work. And this is definitely a book you're going to want to snatch over on Amazon right now. But Seth, I want to talk about the voter registration issue here because from my understanding, I mean, I used to think that Georgia was a red state. And it wasn't until actually the first day I met you was when I was working for Lindell TV. We were getting ready to hop off a plane and follow you and Holly Kessler over to the state capitol to hand over these signed affidavits alleging thousands of allegations, alleging a lot of just potential election fraud or just things that were strange on election day. And it was strange to me because there wasn't much of a warm welcoming, I guess I could say, from the governor's office. In fact, I was filming in his office and they thought it was more so of a joke. But obviously, election fraud is a top issue for Georgians right now. And it's quite strange that a Republican-led state would push forward for something like automated voter registration. It just sounds like it's rigged against them. Why would they push for something like that, knowing that this usually goes and works in the favor of Democrats?
Well, that's a really deep question. I personally believe North Carolina was the original target state for the 2020 election. And when Trump was too big to rig off in North Carolina, which has okay election laws, then Georgia was a more open target. Ken Paxton, the attorney general of Texas, talks about how Georgia was ripe for the plucking based on that consent decree between Kemp and Abrams that allowed for Georgia's mail-in ballot count to continue and continue. An important thing to note about Georgia is on the morning of November 4th, 2020, Secretary of State Raffensperger went on the Today Show, and he talked about how there was only about 2% of the ballots left to count in the state, which would have meant about 100,000 more ballots. Trump had a lead that was sufficient to hold the state, even if every vote went for Biden. But somehow they continue to count and count an additional 200,000. So I'm not sure what motivated the state to put in automatic registration, but it wasn't done through the legislature. It was just done by executive fiat, and it goes through the Department of Driver Services. But Georgia is a problematic state politically anyway. Demographics are tough. Atlanta is continuing to burst at the seams. Well, the surrounding counties, there's 159 counties statewide, are overwhelmingly Republican and what I consider to be maxed out. So without substantial improvement with voters, black male voters, then you're going to have a very hard time holding Georgia. And I could easily see by 2036, Georgia turning into a Virginia type state, a 6 or 8 point Democrat state at this rate.
That's really horrifying. I mean, I love Georgia. I've been warning my friends and family who live over there still. A lot of them are very concerned, especially, you know, given what we see in Texas, too. They're dealing with an Islamification of Georgia as well right now problem. So this is definitely something that those, if you live in the state of Georgia, you've got to pay attention to. Seth, I kind of want to pivot a little bit here to the House races, because you've got a really important piece of information right now also up on one of your slides. And it dates back to 1934. So walk us through what are the odds that President Trump takes the House as well, given the history behind all of this.
Look, this is the very tough chamber. And I, as an intelligence officer in the Army, I had the, I guess you could call it a luxury or maybe the responsibility to give realistic assessments to the commander so he can make an informed decision. The House is very difficult since 1934. Why do I use that year? Because that is the first midterm year of what is called the New Deal Coalition. So American politics fundamentally changed with the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932. So in 34, Roosevelt and the Democrats actually gained seats on their House majority. But in 20 out of 23 midterms since that year, the president's party has lost seats. There were also exceptions in 1998 and 2002. People were tired of all the talk about Bill Clinton's personal scandals. In 2002, the country viewed Democrats as not sufficient to stand against the risk of a post-9/11 world. But look, with 20 out of 23 midterms going against the president's party, it's really clear 87% of the time the president's party loses seats. So with a 220 to 215 as elected majority in the 2024 election. Now, that number fluctuates with deaths or retirements, resignations, and whatnot. But it's not going to be easy before anybody starts out of the gate for the GOP to hold the House. And one thing the audience needs to understand is this is separate of what the president is doing. You hear a lot of, well, if Trump doesn't do this or if Trump does that. Well, in 1986, Reagan had a 63% approval rating, and the Republicans still lost House seats and lost the House popular vote by almost 10 points. So what's the problem with the House this year? I would give it 75-25 odds that the Democrats are in the driver's seat for flipping the House. Virginia and Colorado are mimicking California's redistricting plan, which is going around the independent commission and putting an election out there for voters to get around it. Both of those states run very corrupt elections. And if Virginia gets away with a 10-to-1 map and Colorado gets away with a 7-to-1 map, then really mathematically, there's not a path for Republicans to hold the House. So the silver lining here is the Senate should be a Republican hold, and also the 2030 reapportionment. If Trump can get the illegals off the census and they naturally cut Democrat seats due to population loss, then Republicans will be the juggernaut party for the coming decades.
Yeah, and that's a lot of ifs. And I know the president making that a top priority, that he does want to make sure that does happen. And just to remind our audience too, I know I've talked about it on the show previously, but now we're officially up to, I believe, 35 Republicans in the House who are not seeking re-election for 2026. So obviously, there's a lot on the table for that. Seth, I also want to get your take on this. You know, the DOJ under the Trump administration launched a special division within this. Well, it's more of an investigative team over at the DOJ's Civil Rights Division, and they're trying to get all of these states to turn over their voter registration so they could sift through it and compare the registration, say who's an American citizen, who's not an American citizen. But it's been kind of an uphill battle for Hermie Dillon to do just that. In fact, both Democrats and even some Republican states have refused to hand over their voter rolls, and they have, in fact, launched lawsuits. Now, so far, there's been three successful rulings in favor of the individual states. I believe California is one of them. What do you think of the job the DOJ has done thus far in regards to try to crunch down these numbers to make sure that we don't have non-U.S. citizens on our federal voter registrations?
So I think that they're on point with going after the rolls, because the rolls are the foundation of what the corruption is. Every time you have a viral hit, like the Nick Shirley videos going in Minneapolis and finding all these fake daycares, they go hand in hand with exactly what happens with voter registration. In the book, I talk about a woman named Jamie Visaya from King County, Washington. So we're talking about Metro Seattle. And she had 16 ballots in her apartment's mailbox in October of 2024. And she ran straight to the King County press to complain about this, saying that she's never seen something this bad in all of her years of voting. So I reached out to her to try to get some quotes for the book, and she's nowhere to be found. So I think somebody told her to go away. Where there's smoke, there's fire, and going after the voter rolls is definitely going to expose this, and it could expose it even in red states. Even in states, if a new Secretary of State comes in and isn't actively corrupting the rolls. So a good example of that would be Justin Heap, who's a recorder in Maricopa County, and he's a solid guy. He's trying to clean up a giant mess, but that doesn't mean that he's not sitting on top of a problematic voter roll. So as for motivations of some of these red states not to turn over voter rolls, I can't speak on that. But it is definitely a clear sign that the biggest concealment going on with elections has to do with personal records and data.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting part in all of this, too. How do you view, and again, folks, our audience, I want to remind you, his book is available right now over at Amazon, The American War on Election Corruption. That's where you guys could grab it right now, because I want to kind of talk to you about the book. What are some of the most key points in all of this when it comes to election corruption? What should the American people, just some overview, know about the top priorities in fixing these issues? If you really want to get to the core of all of this, because Seth, you've been fighting this battle for years now, so I know you know it better than anyone else. So what should the American people know and have on their radar that we really need to prioritize going after?
We need to prioritize transparency, and we need to prioritize process that allows for the public to trust election results, no matter whether they favor the candidates we want or whether they favor the other side. One thing that we really miss is the impact of what I would call the area of influence around the world. We have 34 out of 47 European countries have outright banned mail-in voting. And the 13 that allow, some of them only allow it for overseas citizens voting. So we're talking about a few thousand ballots. Everybody else, you go in person, you cast a vote, you have results tabulated there at the precinct on election day, and then you get the results. The BBC in 2016, funny enough, wrote up a bunch of pieces about how to spot election fraud in third world countries, especially sub-Saharan African countries. And one of the biggest tells of a fraudulent election is a prolonged vote count. So why is it that Arizona is a third the size of Florida, yet takes 2 weeks to count its ballots when Florida can do it in a couple hours and people act like that's an okay system? So we talk a lot about what's going on in the rest of the world. Mexico, Russia, Israel, Japan all banned mail-in voting. So there is a lot of foundation laid. The book was tailored to speak to the fence sitter, the nominal soft Republican who likes Trump's policies, thought that he has a big mouth, and then that's why he lost the 2020 election. So the lesson of Charlie Kirk's life is that if you can't figure out how to penetrate the consciousness of the middle of the road voter, which most people are not that political. We think that they are because we're on shows like this, or, you know, we sit on Telegram or True Social and think that everyone agrees with us. But unless you can arm people with surefire information, historical fact, this book has hundreds of citations throughout it. I didn't even put a lot of my graduate level theories about election corruption in. And I'm not surprised the book is successful, but I had no idea that it would launch and be a number one bestseller in three categories. So that's a good read for people who need to be convinced of very elementary facts about how corrupt our elections are without going off in the deep end.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for folks at home to understand too. Seth, I want to ask you, we've got like 2 minutes left, but I want to get your take on this because obviously this administration has been pushing to utilize AI and a lot of key elements in all of this. How can AI also help us in the mess of trying to, you know, limit the amount of election fraud that's happening in our elections?
So AI is a good tool if used by people with good intentions and with proper guardrails on. I think that with so many records in some of these states, in Michigan, one of the things I point out in the book about Michigan, it's extremely embarrassing to be associated with elections there. There's a bunch of good groups in Michigan, like the Michigan Fair Elections Institute that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. 3 months prior to the 2024 election, 83.5% of Michigan's population of 10.1 million was registered to vote. The problem with that is only 78% of any population is even over the age of 18 and therefore eligible to vote. So that's not Captain Seth Keschel's back of the napkin conspiracy. That is documented fact that there are at least 500,000 too many voters in Michigan just based on age. And that's before you scale back people who are incarcerated and not eligible to vote at that time, people who aren't naturalized citizens who can't vote. So this is the kind of stuff that you can use AI to go through rolls and quickly identify fraudulent registrations. But there are all sorts of AIs that are less accurate than others. One system that's not an AI would be the ELLI system by Dr. Rick Richards, the Electoralist, which has a really unique built-in functionality to identify bad registrations immediately linked to death notices and obituaries that he put on display at a recent summit I was at in Washington, D.C. So these tools that are being built, there's a lot of them. And I get them in my comment sections on Substack, CaptainK.us, where people are like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? I think that there's really a deep investigation that needs to be done based on why these are producing different results, which, of course, will show you that there are still weaknesses in AI. But it must be used if we're going to get to the bottom of this, but it has to be used in synchronicity across all 50 states in the same way, because not everyone has the same quality of voter registration or the same front-end methodology of putting voters on rolls.
Yeah. Well, Seth, I think it's all really important information for folks at home right now looking to learn more about our election process itself and how to purge the election fraud from our elections. I think this is a top priority for most Americans. So you got to stop what you're doing right now. Head on over to Amazon, The American War on Election Corruption. Seth has just released this book. It is a bestseller and he's very proud of it, as he should. He does incredible work. I've been following Seth for years now. So it's an honor to have him on the program today. Seth Keschel, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
All right, Brianna. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you to my friend. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We've got more to discuss in just a little bit. In the meantime, though, if you're going to go somewhere, too, maybe head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. Those t-shirts are still on sale for the next couple of minutes. $14.99 for the limited edition 250 shirts. Again, over at the thealexjonesstore.com. And it's the March Mega Sale going on right now as well.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down to make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue, But this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with ethylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com. It's T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. And they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com. And I thank you for your support. I'm going to go to the hospital.